Amen. Amen. Thank you, Craig. Well, hello. Nice to see you all. It's wonderful to be with you today. We are continuing our series called Reimagining Church, and today I have been tasked with the theme of speaking to the church as a place of healing. Many years ago, I heard a sermon on the theme of healing, and it wasn't the best sermon I'd heard. This guy stood up and with a rather judgmental tone to what he was saying, spent 30 minutes making us all feel like there was something wrong with our faith because we all had these biological issues with ourselves. It was a sense in which, you know, unless you're knowing perfect good biological health, you're not living God's best, and this just isn't good enough. So after doing that, making us all feel very judged, there was this moment when he didn't have his glasses on. He picked up a Bible and he said, where are my glasses? And he was like, and then he found them and he was like, right. And he held the Bible like that. And I thought, how ironic that you just critiqued our health when you yourself require these to see properly. So no judgment in this place today, folks. I hope this is a good news message, an encouraging message, as we explore the whole subject of healing. As Craig says, some of you may know about the organization that I lead. It's a mental health ministry called Sanctuary. And at Sanctuary, we equip the church increasingly around the world, in different countries and languages. We actually have English and Spanish, and we're currently working on German, Romanian, and Russian translations of our course material. But we've been downloaded in lots of countries, and just last year we had the rather exciting and amazing news that the Archbishop of Canterbury, the head of the Church of England, has become our patron. He's endorsed our work, which is an incredible honour for us. So God is really blessing our work. But put simply, our vision is that the church might become a channel of God's healing power to people in the midst of a mental health crisis. But at Sanctuary, we're not fixated on immediate cures, like immediate visible cures, you might say. Instead, we're fixated on helping the church create a culture of healing in which a person is given the right environment and conditions to recover well or to heal in a more holistic way. Now, I've been doing this job for the last 5.5 years, and I have to tell you, I have learned so much about God and about the way he often heals, and about the power of the church to facilitate healing. And one of the key things I've learned is that healing is so much more than simply addressing a purely biological issue. Healing is so much more than curing a physiological challenge. It is much broader, and we need a more comprehensive vision of it. And of course, the theme of healing is so prevalent in the scriptures. From God's promises to Israel in the Old Testament, like in Exodus chapter 15, verse 26, where Moses says to God's people, if you listen carefully to the Lord your God and do what is right in his eyes, if you pay attention to his commands and keep all his decrees, I will not bring on you any of the diseases I brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. This healing promise is there at the start and continues all the way through to the healing miracles of Jesus in the New Testament. And verses like Matthew 8, verse 16, which describes the ministry of Jesus one particular day, when it says, when evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him, and he drove out the spirits with a word and healed all the sick. And the healing theme, of course, carries on into the last book of the Bible as well, the book of Revelation, which reveals and unveils the future of creation, a redeemed, restored, transformed creation where all things are put right. So healing is clearly a very important theme in our story, in the story of God and his people. So when we talk about Jesus calling the church to be a reflection of himself, a reflection of the living God that says, I will heal you. And in reality, we don't see the biological healings that we wish we did. My simple question is, well, how is God healing us then? What does he mean when he says he's committed to our healing? Because God is clearly committed to healing according to scripture. And yet, how is this so in a world where everyone will die?
What does God mean when he says that he will heal us? Because he can't just mean curing us of physiological ailments or biological issues, many of which are just a natural part of aging. Because for a start, look at us. Well, look at me. Let's pick on me. I wear glasses. I'm mildly short-sighted. I don't really need to wear these, but if I want to see something 20 feet away, I need to wear them. Which is why, if ever you catch me like going for a brisk walk through the forest, that Pacific Spirit, or going running, going jogging, if you see me and I know you, very often I don't see you till the last second, which is why I'm scowling at you. As some of you, genuinely, some of you in this room have found before. I won't name Nathan. I didn't recognize him. But these things happen. I need to wear glasses. I also live with an autoimmune disease. And one byproduct of living with an autoimmune disease is that every month I have to have both of my eyes injected. It's not a pleasant experience. There is that turn of phrase, and I have no idea if it's just a British idiom, but in Britain people will say, if something they're to do something bad, they'll say, oh, I'd rather have needles stuck in my eye than do X. And I would say, I would rather have needles stuck in my eyes than have needles stuck in my eyes. It's not a pleasant experience. However, I'm grateful for medical science, which is preserving my sight into older age. So I have an autoimmune disease, and don't tell anyone, the secret's out, I'm losing my hair. But I don't know if any of you noticed that. I say that because I don't know for sure. When I was 32, I went to the hairdresser back in the good old days when I used to pay people money to cut my hair. And I said to the hairdresser, how long have I got before people realize I'm going bald? I just had this slight patch on the back. And he was like, 2 to 3 years. And absolute truth, I went home and I shaved my head, and I've shaved it at least every 48 hours ever since that moment. Because I will decide when I go bald. This is a choice, people. And as far as I'm concerned, I still have hair. I just don't let it grow out. So let's just as long as you know that, this is a choice. As far as I know, I have hair, everything's fine. You know, we're aging, we're changing, we have physical limitations, and we have a life cycle. So in light of all these things, what place is there when God is so committed to healing? What place is there for these things, these experiences? I mean, what about IQ? How high should a person's IQ be before they're prayed to be healed from low IQ? You thought about that? I mean, that could be quite tricky, isn't it? Brother, let me pray for you for your low IQ. Oh, thanks. Thanks for caring for me. You know, these things can feel arbitrary, and I would suggest these things change across cultures. In certain cultures of the world, definitely in the case of mental health diagnoses, some cultures just officially don't regard certain things as illnesses. They just say, well, these are the quirks of life. This is just the way some people are. Some people hear voices. And as long as they're not distressed by them, what's the big deal? That's a whole other sermon. But you see, my point I'm making is that our ideas of health are culturally located, and often they're arbitrary. So I just don't think this type of healing is the type of healing that God is primarily speaking about. Or at least it must be more nuanced and deeper than just biological curing alone, which is often arbitrary. Now, of course, there are biological challenges that some of us face which are not arbitrary. There are challenges we face when we clearly need a miracle. I'm not talking about those, but I'm saying that our vision of healing has to be bigger than just biological. To further this point, consider this question. Who is more healed? An Olympic athlete who cares about no one else but themselves, doesn't care about God, or someone coming to the end of their life, which has been cut short through an illness, who is offering their soul to God and seeking to stay in good relationship with their loved ones and friends before they die? Who is more healed? Who is more well? Now, of course, not all Olympic athletes are narcissists, before the Olympic athletes among us get offended. This is just a caricature to make a point that we have a tendency to confuse biomedical curing with healing, when they're actually two different things. The life that Jesus promises us to revive us from spiritual death is to imbue us with his shalom, his peace, that will hold us through all circumstances of life. To experience shalom is to be healed, whether you're biologically cured or not. And the concept of shalom is a deep and profound one. It's a word used in Jewish culture to greet and to bid farewell. And it means peace, but it means peace at every level of everything. It's so much bigger than just our idea of peace. It's peace between nations and cultures and communities and families and individuals. It's every single thing acknowledging the presence and goodness of God. It's the lordship of Jesus over every atom of everything. It's so much bigger. It's supreme and deep peace, more than a feeling, more than curing. It's the rock solid foundation of Jesus being Lord over everything all of the time. And you do not need to have perfect biological health to know this, to feel this peace. Someone who truly knows God's shalom is a well person, whether they have perfect biological health or not. Healing, then, I would suggest, is usually a process, a relationship, a journey. And yet we all want the quick fixes in life. And God may or may not do that. But whatever happens, what we all need is healing, which is to experience the peace and love of God, to experience shalom, which offers us reassurance and peace to go through whatever we're facing, knowing that our ultimate home is to be with God, where God is. I would suggest this is the main part of our healing. So let's look at a famous healing that Jesus did and see how it was not just about physiological curing, but about something deeper. So I'm going to read from Mark chapter 5, verses 21 to 34. You can follow along. It says this. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and passed and pressed around him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was free from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask who touched me?" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet and, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." This woman was ceremonially unclean for 12 years. 12 years is a long time. I was like, 12 years ago, I was like 9. It's a long time. But those who became ceremonially unclean were separated from worship at God's temple. Any person or thing that they touched was made unclean as well. She couldn't be cleansed from this. She was entirely rejected for 12 years, untouched, not spoken to, ignored, despised, cut off for 12 years. So the suffering she was experiencing was, yes, it was biological, but it was way more than biological. She was totally alone, cut off from all relationships with anyone. As if the biological challenge wasn't hard enough, she had no one to put their arm around her and say, "I'm so sorry you're going through this. How can I help you?"
She had no one. Imagine what her mental health would have been like. To be on your own for 12 years, despised, rejected, ignored. She had no money. She was poor. She would have been homeless probably. Despised, isolated, languishing, forgotten, less than nothing, and reminded of this daily. And in fear, she eventually owns up when Jesus says, "Who was it?" And it says, in fear, she fell at his feet in fear. Why was she in fear? Well, I think maybe she knew what was coming. Maybe she was expecting Jesus to respond the way any other person had ever responded to her in the last 12 years, which is to say, "How dare you touch me? You've made me unclean." But of course, she didn't make Jesus unclean. Jesus makes her ceremonially clean. He infects her with his cleanness. It's this beautiful moment where he flips it. She is made clean according to the religious system. But her healing is more than just this curing, which is amazing. Yes, she's cured. All thanks and praise be to God. But Jesus heals her by giving her her voice back. He makes her speak up. No one's heard her for 12 years. Maybe that's why she's scared. She's scared to speak up. No one's not spoken in front of anyone for the last 12 years, and you're asking me to speak up? Maybe that's why she was scared. But Jesus heals her by giving her a voice back, by telling her, "You matter, you're important." It heals her relationship to herself, the way she sees herself. It heals her relationship to those around her. You need to listen to her for once. Everyone be quiet and listen to this woman. She's going to speak today. Jesus heals her by making her ceremonially clean, which removes all barriers to engaging in community life. She is reconnected to the spiritual community. Jesus heals her by giving her relationships, by fixing her relationship to God and herself and how others see her, how others relate to her. The biological curing allowed all of this deeper healing to take place. And I tell you, I bet that deeper healing wasn't instantaneous. I bet the next time she went to talk to someone in public, she probably had some reticence. Is it okay for me to speak? When she went to the temple, is it okay for me to be here? We need time to heal. It's the way God has made us. But Jesus began her journey of healing by removing the barrier that prevented her from being seen and known and loved, which is a basic human need. When Jesus miraculously cured those who were sick and afflicted, I would argue that the curing was but a facet of the deeper work of healing. I mean, yes, it demonstrated the power and authority of Jesus as God in flesh. Yes, it was a foretaste of the new creation when Jesus puts all things right, described in the book of Revelation. But I would suggest it was more than just immediate biological curing that Jesus offered people. By curing people, Jesus restores them into community. He removes the barrier that prevents them, practically prevents them from engaging in community life, that prevented them from going to the temple to worship or having people speak to them or acknowledging them or touching them. He removes those barriers by curing them, and in the process, he heals them by placing them in a healing community. Just as he has placed us in a healing community. He gives them a home. He gives them a place to heal. It's like he says, you and your religious systems want to prevent these people from receiving love and care and support, the very things my Father in heaven is totally committed to. So you're going to have to find another reason to exclude them, because I'm removing that barrier. Find another reason to exclude them. Now this woman has time and space to heal, along with many others that Jesus healed. So my question is, what barriers can we remove as a church? You know, many of these barriers we've talked about, like the systems of stigma that existed in the ancient world that would force some people out, they don't exist anymore because we have the benefit of thousands of years of Christian teaching that has formed our ethics. That now we say all people are made equal. Children matter.
People living with some kind of disability need to have access. So we now have created a space where people can engage. Isn't that wonderful? That is the teachings of Jesus worked out. Those are some barriers we've removed so people can engage in a loving community to receive that healing. But what other barriers can we remove? You know, mental health stigma is one barrier that we can remove if we commit to learning about it, to listening to a person's story really well before we judge, to suspend our ideas of what a person or a Christian should be like. If we can put that down and listen to a person's story, we give them a chance to heal, to be seen, to be loved. There are other practical things we can do. We can offer fellowship, hospitality, a kind word, a word of affirmation, looking out for people who are alone and including them. And you know, sometimes you may try to include someone who's isolated and they may not want to be included, but it doesn't mean you should stop because it may be hard for them to engage. But what they may need is for a community to pursue them. And maybe in time, as they heal, they're more willing to be seen. We can all do these very seemingly small practical things to share God's healing power with others by removing the arbitrary barriers that isolate people. You know, in the church I used to lead many years ago, there was a lady named Ronnie. And Ronnie was about 4 feet tall, maybe not that short, but she was very short, in her 80s. And she used to stand at the front door of the church, and she had this amazing ministry that whenever anyone came, whether she knew them or not, well, as long as they wanted to, although sometimes even when they didn't want to, she would give them a hug. Yeah, she'd just hug them. And it was this incredible ministry. And whether you'd been in the church for 3 weeks or 30 years, everyone knew about the incredible ministry that Ronnie had to just welcome people, to show hospitality to anyone and everyone. And one time I asked her about it. I said, why is it you've always been on the welcome team? Like, that is your thing. And she said, you know, it's very simple. When I was a young woman who'd made some bad choices and I came to church, there was this couple who just welcomed me and loved me. They didn't care about what I'd done. They didn't care about any of that. They just showed me love. And so I just do the same for others, whoever they are. She was helping people to heal just by hugging them. Now, I have no idea what she did during COVID. I don't know. I'm guessing her husband got loads of hugs. But the point is, you know, and she's nearly 90 now, and she still does it. So she may be only 4 feet tall, but in God's sight, she's a spiritual giant. I mean, she's amazing. Nothing impressive in the eyes of the world, but Ronnie is a consistent, genuine embodiment of God's love and care expressed through a hug for everyone she meets, a powerful conduit of God's healing power. You know, my family have recently become obsessed by a movie, which some of your families will have done as well, and we really need to talk about this. And I have to say, I think it is a masterpiece, not just because of the music and the animation, but because of the theme, which just seems so powerful to me as a Christian. Do you ever get those movies or stories that just resonate so deeply with your faith? I remember seeing Les Miserables in the West End of London, which sounds very pretentious, doesn't it? Oh, I go to the West End of London to watch things. That's where you watch it. It's only on in the West End of London. So, and I always sat in the cheap seats, for the record. But after watching it the fifth or sixth time, when it finished, there was this one occasion, I just wanted to stand on my stool and start preaching. It was just so powerfully gospel-centric. It was such an incredible, and you know, sometimes these stories do this to me. I don't know if they do to you. But there is this movie which has had a similar effect. It's grabbed our family, and we've watched it at least 12 times in the last month. In fact, we've watched it since I made these notes. So we've watched it 13 times since in the last month. And it's called Encanto. Many of you will have seen it, I'm sure. But Encanto is the story of an everyday young woman named Mirabel, growing up in Colombia. And Mirabel seemingly has nothing particularly special about her in a family of very talented and special people. And the story is about her coming to terms with her place as someone who doesn't have an obvious special gift and someone who doesn't feel especially special. Now, I can't give too much away because I don't want to ruin the best movie you'll ever see. or at least one of the best movies you'll ever see. For those that haven't seen it, I would encourage everyone to watch the movie because it covers the theme of healing and family and home really, really well. It challenges the idea that everyone has to be perfect all of the time. It also highlights the importance of conflict and feeling difficult emotions and being allowed to express them in order that healing might be found. And actually, if we put pressure on people to be perfect all of the time or to keep the pretenses up, we deny them the chance to heal. In a powerful scene in the film, two of the main characters are forced to a difficult place, the scene of a significant trauma which had never been spoken about properly. And at this point in the movie, where everyone and everything is in disarray, the healing comes in this most beautiful way, by simply seeing each other and acknowledging the pain. It is really that simple. When we find a safe place, a sanctuary, a place that we can be authentically ourselves, and we see each other as we are with no pretenses, where we acknowledge the innate value of each other as we are, and we say, I love you, I care about you, I value you. The healing that this releases is so powerful. This is the way that God has made us. We are relational beings. We're made for relationships because we're made in the image of a relationship, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We're made out of a relationship for relationships. And don't believe the lie that our culture would want to tell us again and again and again, that our value is attached to what we can do and what we can produce. It is not true. Our value is attached to our relationships. This is the way that God has made us. And the church can absolutely be a conduit and a powerful witness to the healing power of God if we do the very practical job of being a non-judgmental presence, of entering into each other's stories with open minds and open hearts. If we can do this, we'll see a powerful work of healing in this world. And let's face it, we are seeing that. We are that community. To join in with God's healing power, to be a reflection of the God that heals. You don't need to see instant miracles. We simply need to see one another and offer hospitality. Hospitality and hospital come from the same root word, obviously. And it's simply to care for visitors and guests. To facilitate their healing is to care for visitors and guests. God may or may not do instant biological cures. That is up to him. Those are his gifts to distribute, not ours. But while we wait for God to work in that way, we need to restore people into community so that God can do that deeper work of healing in a person's life, where they can see God in us and are more able to receive his shalom, his peace, which will hold us in this life through death and in the life to come. I have to finish with one more story. In the 10th community, we've lost many great people in recent months and days. And last year, one of our good friends passed away. Carolyn Bollman died on July 23rd last year, way too soon, in my opinion. My wife, Annie, and I had the privilege to be with her close to the end of her life. She asked us to go in and pray for her just before she was sedated, which was 3 days before she met Jesus face to face. But we were with her and we were praying and crying and singing and doing all the things we wanted to do around her bed. And just before we said goodbye to our friend, she said, I'm so sorry to have called you into this. And I truthfully said, without skipping a beat in that moment, Carolyn, there is nowhere else in the world we would rather be than here with you. You know what, as pious as that might sound, I'm not trying to big myself up, but as pious as that might sound, it was a hard and costly place to be confronted with your friend in that place. And wanting so desperately to fix the problem and help. And yet all we could offer was presence. It's hard when we don't have the answers, when we don't see the biological cures.
But I do believe that in the gift of friendship and presence, we can bring hope and healing and shalom to those that need it. Of course, Kerry Lynn has now received her healing. She has received God's shalom in its fullness. She is perfectly related to Father, Son, and Spirit. She is one of the great cloud of witnesses. But of course, we still miss her. We do not grieve as others do who are without hope, but we do grieve. So may you reflect the nature of our Heavenly Father, the God who removes barriers that prevents people from entering into his new community. And may you reflect the God who heals us in relationship, the God who heals us by granting us his peace, his presence, his friendship, even in the midst of chaos. And may this peace, this shalom, hold you through this life and death and into the life to come and the new creation where all things will be put right. God bless you.